Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to Pro U Podcast, episode number 116. Chuck McCarthy. Here's a fabulous story in the small world. Talking to a client, he's like, "Hey, hired this actor, and he's this people walker, blah blah blah, whatever." And I was like, "What? You can get in touch with him?" He goes, "Yeah, cool. You know, I'll take anybody." And I think the next day I was talking to a client, and these clients, you know, had known each other. And I said, "Hey, I was, you know, talking to so-and-so and mentioned Chuck and McCarthy." And it was Miss Ernie Walker. She's like, "Oh, my God, I know him," and blah, blah, blah. And you'll hear more about that from Chuck. But it was just instantaneously that I was going to get this guy. And a great little story and how it all unfolds. I'm not going to go into any detail about it right now, but just a sweetheart of a guy and picked a little unique path and followed it, and one door opened to another one. And you know, when you think about just good intention, you know, where will just good intention, trying to be a good person, trying to, you know, find your lane, and Chuck has done that brilliantly. And it's just a cute, unique, wonderful story. And a lot of these people that, you know, I've had on the podcast and getting to know, they, you know each other and stuff. So he's a favorite of many. So without further ado, here is Sir Chuck McCarthy. Whatever you wanna, and you look comfortable, so I don't have to tell you to get comfortable. So that's.
I'm not very good at sitting. I'm more of a like recliner.
A recliner where you're doing that well, but I can get you a chair or anything if you wanna.
No, it's fine. I mean, you're good at like reclining on the floor, but not sitting. Like I can't sit cross-legged. I mean, it's not comfortable for me.
Well, I want you to be. Are you comfortable?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Okay. Welcome to the Pro U Podcast, Chuck McCarthy.
Thanks for having me.
The is this like the big thing right now? You being the people walker, is that the biggest thing that's kind of hit your path?
Yeah, definitely. I mean,
that's what you're known for right now. Like you're that guy.
Yeah, it's pretty huge. I'm doing radio interviews in Slovenia and New Zealand and Ireland and Australia, and I was on the TV in Germany, and people in Japan want to be people walkers. And
this is insane.
Yeah, I got a message from Buenos Aires today from people wanting to help me build a website and stuff.
Okay, so let's stop there. Because I want to talk more about that, but I want to figure out who you are, the Chuck McCarthy prior to this big moment in your life. So where were you born, family, stuff like that?
I was born in Montgomery, Alabama. My parents,
Southern boy.
Yeah, I guess so. My dad, I guess, was a carpetbagger. He was from Massachusetts, and when I was five, we actually moved up to Massachusetts, and I lived in Gloucester, Massachusetts for a couple of years growing up. And that's actually my mom actually stacked rocks on the beach all the time.
This is what's so funny is Chuck walks in, and I grabbed him some water, and he's walking around looking, and he goes, "Hey, my mom stacked rock." And I'm like, "Dude, no one has ever said that." And he looked at me, I'm like, "What do you mean no one's ever?" But you know, I'm that guy that most people know, and they're always like, "Hey, I was somewhere crazy. Did you?" I'm like, "No, dude, people are doing this all over. They've been doing it for thousands of years. I'm typically the only one that someone typically knows of. So for you to walk in and be like, my mom did that, that's so cool. So tell me a little bit about that."
Yeah, so we lived right next to the beach in
Gloucester.
In Gloucester.
The crab, I think, of that show.
Wicked Tuna.
Yeah.
Is out of Gloucester.
Okay, and, that is where I heard it from.
Yeah, the Perfect Storm.
Okay.
Takes place on land in Gloucester.
Okay.
And, And I guess the correct local pronunciation is Gloucester.
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 you do that well.
So I grew up there on the beach. It was real cold and wet. And, but it was, we were right on the ocean and we did, have a lot of rocks and things to
do what you can with what you have,
We had a lot of stuff like that around, and
so when your mom was stacking them, was she telling you why she was stacking them, or
she's somebody who she's an artist, and a lot of her art is very repetitive, almost. I would say it's like a, not a trance, but it's like she does a lot of things that involve repetition.
Okay.
Like she is, she crochets and makes hats, and she, quilts. And
okay.
So there's a rhythm to it.
Got it.
And I think that was probably why she did it.
So it's like kind of meditative to her.
Yeah. A lot of her art seems like there's a meditation factor to it. Like,
because of the repetition.
Yeah, and she's able to kind of get lost in what she's doing.
What's so funny is, speaking of this, it's a total tangent, but people said, do you meditate? And I've always not or never really knew what to say. And about a week ago on this sports radio show, this guy had a guest on, and he goes, "Do you know why I do that?" Whatever he was talking about. He goes, "Because I don't think of anything else when I'm doing it." And this guy, who's like a chiropractor, goes, "That's meditation." And I went, "See, that's what you just call it. If you do something and you're so into it that it blocks out everything." And I was like, "So that's exactly why I do it." I mean, I don't think it started out like, "I'm going to go," but it just gradually became this thing. And then the ones you see around the house are glued, because I realized if I'm in the house and I glue them, it's as meditative as getting in the car and driving and doing that whole experience. But I can just do it right here.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool. Now, did you do it with mom or?
I would do it. We would make, they're kind of like organic sandcastles. They're kind of organic sandcastles. We called them, my mom, I don't know if there's an actual name, she called it droodling. but it was like when you take the sand, the wet sand between your fingers, and you drip it.
Uh-huh.
And it slowly creates
kind
a
of
tower.
Builds. Yeah. Wow.
We would, so we always made sandcastles like that instead of like packing, buckets full of sand and stacking,
going like the whole other direction. That's pretty cool, because I've never done that, but it actually sounds pretty cool.
I mean, if you like rock stacking, I'm sure you'd love this.
Sprinkling the little granules of sand like one at a time and seeing if you can balance and how high.
Yeah, and it's like it comes out and it's like some sort of a pastry, almost, like you're
exactly
doing a pastry kind
of
thing.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. So, mom, dad, siblings, what was that whole scenario?
Yeah. So, my mom and dad went to Alabama and were kind of like the tail end of the, I guess, original civil rights movement. My dad was, an organizer, and like my mom ran for Congress one time.
Wow.
Just to be on the ballot, and they were basically there to like counteract the Dixiecrats and George Wallace, because at that time there were basically two Democratic parties in the South, and my parents were part of the one that wasn't racist and terrible, and
yay.
So basically they were there, and then we went to Massachusetts, and my dad was a paralegal for legal aid services, like public assistance kind of services, where if somebody wasn't able to get their Social Security, or somebody wasn't able to get their disability, or somebody wasn't able to, their landlord was trying to throw them out for needing a wheelchair ramp, my dad would help them jump through as many legal hoops as he could as a paralegal, you know, as much as he could help them without being a full lawyer. And
so you're the only child?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, and I have an older sister and a younger brother.
Oh, okay. So you're the middle.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
And my younger brother is like 3 years younger than me, and my older sister is, I think, 8 or 9 years older than me.
So then, how long did you stay in Massachusetts?
I was there till I was 11, and then my parents got divorced, and me and my brother moved with my mom to Atlanta.
So what was that moment in your life like?
I don't want to say it was like a happy moment, but it definitely wasn't as negative as, you know, some
people. A lot of other people experience.
Have.
Oh, that's cool.
Just because, like, my, I don't know. It was a totally different experience living in Atlanta than living in Massachusetts. I don't think I do well in cold, cold climates. I think I do have like the seasonal, seasonal affected disorder where you get depressed if you don't get enough sun or something.
Wow.
I don't know. All I remember about being in Massachusetts is kind of being sad.
But then being away from your father.
Yeah, but it was an interest. It was kind of weird because my dad was off in Western Massachusetts a bunch because he wasn't able to work doing the legal aid in Boston or closer to where we were. So it was kind of. I don't know. I don't want to call him an absentee dad, but...
Oh, okay. I was saying, so like him being away was like, we're going to move without dad. It's like, okay, not that different.
Yeah, it wasn't...
And it's warm. Yay.
Yeah, it wasn't... I don't know. It wasn't like, oh, I don't like my dad. It was just not...
I got it. No, it makes sense.
I don't know.
No, it does. It really, really makes sense. It was almost a lateral movement versus some kind of culture shock to what was consistently one way.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And again, like, it's better, and you're like, wow, I feel better. Hey, it's warmer. Wow, I like this, and I don't see dad like I didn't see dad when I was cold and unhappy.
Yeah, exactly.
So, what were you like as a child, like in Massachusetts till 11, and then after that, like, what were you like? What were you into?
I kind of call my time in Massachusetts my great TV marathon, because
that's what you did.
Yeah, once we got cable and once
and it's cold, shut it down.
Yeah, once we had cable, once we had a VCR and cable, you know, I just watched TV and watched movies. Just,
when were you born?
I can't say.
You can't say? Like you're legally bound?
Well, you know, I joined SAG-AFTRA recently, and that they've been battling hard with IMDb to stop them from printing people's ages. So I don't want to undermine them by just throwing mine
there
out
you
there.
Go. Perfect. Got it. No worries then. Okay.
But however old people think I am, that's probably close.
I really like that answer, dude. That should just be the answer. Hey, whatever you think I am, that's probably close. Go with that. Then I don't really have to be involved. I love that. I just want to learn one thing new every day, and I just did. So thank you for that, Chuck. All right. So what were you into?
Cartoons, action movies, TV show, like just all kinds of the TV shows. I mean, and I watched like everything, like, you know, that was back when like Nickelodeon turned to Nick at Night after 8 o'clock or something. And my parents would let me stay up pretty late. So I was like, you know, I think I've seen all of Green Acres and Mr. Ed and all those shows that you know, are so old, and you know, Three's Company, whatever. Whatever was on, I was watching it, because literally it was cold. I stayed inside and watched TV. I had a paper route, and I had to do that. And
now, was that kind of mom and dad saying, be responsible?
Well, it was
like, you want money?
Yeah, it was like, do you want money to buy the VCR and rent tapes and do stuff like that?
Get a little job like for yourself.
Yeah, have this. So I did that, and I don't know. I guess when I wasn't watching TV and it was warm enough, we went to the beach, and we went and played on the rocks and built forts and stuff with the neighbors and stuff. But it was kind of isolated where we were.
What was school like for you? Did you fit in? Did you have a group of friends, or a group you fit into?
I had friends, but I definitely kind of felt like an outsider, just because a lot of the kids, you know, their parents were either...
Did you have the beard back then? Was that what made you stand out?
Yeah, I had the beard.
In third grade?
Yeah, I had the beard, and a lot of kids were kind of like, this Charlie kid, I don't know about him. Charlie's got that beard, and it's wicked weird.
Oh, dude, that's great. That's great.
A lot of people ask me, they say, oh, you don't have a Southern accent. And I say, well, so I was born in Alabama, and when I was 5, I had a crazy Southern accent. I was like, you know, but when you move to Massachusetts and you hear, Charlie said Rayed for a month straight in kindergarten.
Let's curb that, shall we?
When you hear that for a month straight in kindergarten, you lose your accent pretty quickly.
Wow.
So, I lost my Southern accent, and I never quite picked up the Gloucester accent. I guess I can kind of do the Gloucester accent.
Yeah, totally. I can't tell, but if anyone doesn't know you and they start talking to you, they go, oh, you have, because you definitely, there's something to your, but I couldn't pick where you were from.
Yes.
People typically go, oh, you've got so-and-so accent?
Yeah, it's usually like a kind of a South Brooklyn. No, no, I don't. Nobody. That's
no one
the
does.
Thing is, like, people are like, "Where are you from?" Or you know,
they can't
and then
tell.
When I say, they're like, "Oh, you don't."
No,
you don't have a Southern accent.
No.
But
so you get to move.
You move to Atlanta.
So now what? It's warm all the time. So you shut down TV.
Yeah, not as much TV. Definitely like getting out and about more. And
are you still more a little on the lonelier side, or are you kind of with more kids now?
Yeah, I mean, we were definitely in a neighborhood with more kids, and, it was definitely a different thing. Like, in Massachusetts, we lived kind of on the edge of this area where it was all kind of big mansions and... like kind of rich eccentric people had built weird mansions there. Like there's a place with all these trap doors and secret passages, and the guy spent, he basically like moved there. He moved there and started building this house. And like, I don't think he stopped until he died. So he just built this house until he died. And so I think it's called Beauport, and it's just craziness. And, so we were on the edge of that, in the summertime people would come to those houses, but in the wintertime it was completely empty, and in the wintertime you also like can't really ride your bike a couple mile, you know, you don't want to ride your BMX bike a couple miles in the snow to try to get to where the other kids are and stuff. So it was kind of definitely a more isolated area. But yeah, and Atlanta was different because it wasn't, there wasn't that barrier of it being super cold, and there were kids around my neighborhood, and I would go outside.
So you sound like you had a pretty normal, good childhood outside of the divorce, and that actually wasn't so bad. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't. I think maybe the only thing that was maybe different from most people is that I just did, even in Atlanta, coming into a new school in middle school is probably the worst time to come into
totally,
a new school.
Yeah, for real.
And I definitely did feel like, still kind of felt like an outsider, because there were kids that had been going to school together at least since kindergarten.
Yeah.
And then, so I was not one of those kids. And I kind of felt like a little bit like an outsider until I went to high school. And that's because I got a scholarship and went to this boarding school in North Georgia called Raven Gap. And
what was the scholarship for?
It was just a financial aid scholarship. They have one of the largest endowments of any private schools, any of the private
schools. So what was that experience like?
That was totally different, because everybody there was from somewhere else. And, you know, the only kids that had been going to school together for a long time were the few, like, day students or faculty kids. And so it was like kind of like being on equal ground, or, you know, with everyone for the
first
time.
That's cool. Oh, yeah, yeah. That was different for you, instead of feeling like, and there was, very cool.
Yeah, and there was kids from all over the world. And so that was, I think it was great. I probably learned more from just being around the other people.
I bet.
I think that's the advantage of going to a school like that, not necessarily the actual education, but the being around other kids that are coming from totally different.
Well, it's almost like you're experiencing culture, but you're in the same spot. It's just because of the people you're with.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
I had, like, my freshman year, I had a Ethiopian roommate. I had a roommate from Bosnia at one point. I had a roommate
from South Korea. That's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, and, you know, went to school with all those kids, and kids from Japan, the Republic of Georgia, and it was definitely an experience, and kids from all over the country too. So,
wow. So how long did you stay there? Trying to get us to LA.
Yeah, sorry, I'm taking
no,
the
no, no,
long
no. I'm
road.
Just, I shouldn't say I'm trying. I'm just saying that's where I'm headed. So, how are you? Then
I went to school there for 4 years, so 9th through 12th.
Okay,
and then I went to the University of Georgia.
Okay,
in Athens.
Did you have a major?
I started off as pre-med, so I was going to be a doctor, and then I decided that I hated the chemistry department, and I hated the idea of the chemistry department, and I hated chemistry. And
well, clarity is a beautiful thing. I actually was I was working at a grocery store, and this buddy of mine goes, he asked me like two questions. He goes, well, you should go into engineering, because I liked math or something. And he goes, here's the classes to take. And I took those four classes because I had no clue, and I think I dropped at least two or three of them, and then the next quarter dropped engineering. So I feel you. I feel you.
Yeah. Well, I got a lot of kind of useless humanities out of it, because I took Latin and things like that to try to make it easier for me to understand drug names, even though they're all gobbledygook now. I don't know. I was kind of trying to just stay away from being an artist, because my mom was an artist, and I don't know.
You didn't want to be?
I didn't.
What did you feel like you might be accidentally if you weren't careful?
Yeah.
Dude, that's fantastic. If I'm not careful, do you know what could happen to me? I could become an artist.
Yeah. So then I ended up in art school at University of Georgia. And
see, you just weren't paying attention.
Yeah.
Bad.
Yeah, I know.
Now, what was your instrument, vehicle, art?
I never had a focus.
I
tried to go into like digital media art, but it was at that time it was a cross-disciplinary thing.
So why did you go into art if you weren't pursuing it ever in your life? Just because your mom was like, why don't you do art because I'm an artist?
No, because it was... I mean, I was doing it.
You were doing what?
Art.
You were. You just left this out?
I was doing...
Do I have to dig this out of you? You don't want to talk about... I don't want to talk about art. I don't want to talk about me doing art. Okay, so I did art. Okay, there.
At some point in time...
I'm sorry I had to drag that out of you, Chuck.
I did art. but it was a weird thing, too, because I did art in like middle school. I did art. And then in high school, I kind of had a difference of opinion with the art teacher, and so I didn't really do art in high school. And then in college, I kind of started doing art out of frustration from chemistry.
Dude, this is like the best part of your story right here, but it almost makes sense, you know what I mean? Out of frustration.
And then I went into the art school, and I was an artist, and went to art school, and it was great. I mean, I guess as great as art school can be, it's kind of a frustrating. It's almost as frustrating as chemistry, except for chemistry has right and wrong answers, and art doesn't. So you can't, when you get in a fight with your teacher, it's pretty much just their opinion versus yours. So
you had a better chance of winning the argument in art than you did chemistry.
I didn't win any of those arguments in either of them, but it definitely...
So was it like a defiant thing that you had, or you just kind of wanted to be free that you had these little...
No, I mean, I just think that's what art school is. It's you have different teachers because...
Discovering different parts of
yourself. Yeah, they're different things. I mean, that's all a teacher... I mean, teachers in art school can show you some techniques and tell you things and show you other people's work or their work. But at the end of the day, what you're getting out of taking a class with a specific art teacher is their opinion on art and what is, what's aesthetically pleasing or what is art. And you can... totally agree with them or disagree with them or agree with some of the things.
Exactly.
But basically that's what you're getting out of it. I mean, it's the same thing I have found with acting too, is like there's no right, there's no right or wrong acting.
Two people get up and do the same scene differently and be like, wow, I liked them both, but they're totally different. It's like, well, the people are different.
Yeah, exactly. And teachers are presenting different ways to try to get to the same emotions or try to get the same performance, which is either something that feels totally real and natural or something that feels stylized and weird or something that feels that is funny or not funny and it's really just how they describe it or what their opinion on it is what you get out of the class. I mean...
Okay, so when you get out of college and you got this piece of paper that says you're an artist, what do you do then? What does Chuck do then?
Let's see, what did I do? I got a job building tents.
Okay.
For golf tournaments.
Okay.
And I... drove down to Key Biscayne, Florida, off the coast of Miami, and built tents for a golf tournament, for like a senior PGA golf tournament.
And how did that fall on your path?
it was something, I think I found it on Craigslist.
And it was just wacky, weird, and different?
Well,
and
you
said,
it was
I'm
like,
out of school, I can do whatever I want?
Well, yeah, and I just didn't, you know, I had an art degree. It's like, what am I going to do with that?
I can do anything.
Yeah.
Cool. I mean, I like it. I totally like it. I was just curious what the motivation was behind it.
Yeah, just trying to get a job. I guess
I wanted to eat, and I needed money.
Jobs for $400, Alex. yeah. I needed to get a job, and also.
So, how long were you in Florida for?
About 3 weeks, and I was living in this apartment with these five other guys, but it wasn't like a cramped situation. It was a pretty large apartment, but it was interesting. It was like me, two guys from Atlanta, and then three Canadian illegal immigrants.
Dude, like, you could write a sitcom about all these little vignettes of your life. Dude, just as you're explaining it, I'm like, someone write this down.
Yeah, so it was like me, these two guys from Atlanta, and the three illegal aliens, essentially, but from Canada. So I don't know how Trump would feel about them. and it was, yeah, it really was a crazy kind of thing. The main two guys were Welsh. So that was my little crew. But like there was a larger crew. I don't know how to, it was like some sort of military setup, but not, it wasn't military at all, but like there was like little like teams of people working.
That all worked for this.
Yeah, working on this larger setup. And the main guys were these Welsh guys that had all kinds of crazy stories about shooting at each other, like getting drunk and like beating each other with pots and pans and shooting at each other. And I guess one of them had gotten drunk and driven a golf cart up a tree one time. Like he hit the tree and the golf cart went straight up, like vertical. He fell out of it and just left it parked, leaning up against the tree. They were crazy. And, I don't know. I might still be building tents. It wasn't the worst job, but I was laying down AstroTurf on a grandstand on the 18th hole, and I walked off the grandstand backwards.
Ouch.
Yeah, and I fell probably about 12 feet onto my side and shoulder and neck, and luckily it was in the rough, because if it had been on the actual green, I would have been paralyzed or maybe even dead. And so that was the end of my tent building career.
What were your injuries?
Mainly just kind of spinal, there weren't any actual fractures, but obviously
huge shock and impact.
Probably like whiplash from my head.
Shoulder
hitting,
whole
and then
skeletal
my head
system
my,
was just bang.
My hip was really bruised, and my
weren't doing that job anymore. So was it like, okay, now just move back home?
Yeah, so I went back home and took the 4 Vicodin that they gave me, or whatever, I don't know. And then I was like, wow, I understand why people like Vicodin. This isn't that kind of story. I didn't fall down the rabbit hole of Vicodin. But I do get it.
Just to reiterate and be clear, I do understand it.
Because it makes you just not care about anything. I was there, and then I got I started looking for a job again and trying to do and doing, you know, my, whatever my 3 weeks of physical therapy or whatever silly amount of physical therapy they
prescribed.
Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, you'll get, you know, go to your two physical therapy sessions.
Everything will be fine then.
Yeah. After that, you won't need any help. I was in.
You'll never have to do anything again.
I was probably in the best shape of my life building tents because I was like swinging sledgehammers. And
well, I'd say it's the best time to have an injury. You know, I mean, I'd say healthier people get, you know, injured less and they recover quicker.
But. It was still a bummer. So
let's get us to, like, I have direction. I know what I want to do. When does that point come into your life? Or are you still not there? I'm like, how are we getting to L.A.? Was it L.A.?
Oh, man. Okay, so let's see. So I worked for a small but corrupt I worked for a small but corrupt ice cream franchise.
Fantastic.
I worked selling junk on eBay. At a junk shop underneath a fried fish restaurant across from Oakland Cemetery. I sold a lot of haunted dolls because they would just bring in dolls and I would write up on eBay, this doll was found in the basement of a building across from Oakland Cemetery, the oldest cemetery in Atlanta.
How old are you when you're doing this?
I don't know, 23, something. I have no idea.
This is my job. All right, so continue.
And then I got into production work. I started doing commercials and PAing on commercials and movies and pilots. Like in Atlanta, here people mainly stick in one realm. Like.
Mm-hmm.
But there it was just whatever you could get and they would get whoever they could get. So I was doing that.
Is that kind of the bug bit you, like that, all that stuff kind of you started enjoying?
Well, it was just something that I was good at I was pretty good at and people liked me or seemed to like me and I was doing okay and it made pretty good money. And So
is that what the launch was to?
I worked on a golf commercial with this woman, and this woman, Pia Clemente, and she and I got along, and her brother lived in Atlanta, and she came back to Atlanta. After we had worked on this commercial and we met up and she was like, oh, I have like some sort of exciting news. And I'm like, what is it? And she's like, I might be nominated for an Oscar for a short I directed or that I produced. I was like, okay, well, that's cool. That's
okay.
I would say that's exciting news, not kind of exciting news.
And she
ended up being nominated for that. And she was telling me I should come out to LA and
good sales pitch. I just won an Oscar. You should come out to LA.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
I'm in.
I'd like an Oscar.
Yeah.
but she said, you know, come out to LA. I'll get you work, or I'll help you get work. And,
well, fantastic. That's all you need.
And, you know, I had a couple of other people I had worked with that I felt like I could contact when I came out here, and a couple of friends that were out here. So I actually went for a 3-week vacation / trip to see what LA was like, to see if I could find work or actually work or whatever and see if I liked it out here. And I never left.
Bravo. When was that? What year?
I want to say it was 2007.
2007. Okay.
Yeah.
So did you keep pursuing the production side or did you start getting into the acting then? Or?
Yeah, so I worked in production out here for maybe a solid like 4 or 5 years and in art department and production and PAing and some maybe like sort of office PA work, but mainly it was in the commercial realm, which doesn't really have a clear path upwards unless you decide to join a specific department. So I, during that time, I started blogging and being somebody on the internet. I'm somebody. And so I was doing internet stuff, and I just at one point I was trying to get out of PAing and get out of art department, and I got a job doing social media marketing for a company.
Wow.
It wasn't the best thing. I realized pretty quickly that I didn't love it.
Well, and, being the kind of free spirit you are, and then going to something like that sounds a little...
Yeah, there was a lot of just, there was definitely a lot of hang-ups and not great stuff about it.
Then prompted you to do...
Yeah, well, I guess, like, around this time, my dad and my uncle both died of cancer within almost a week of each other, like, basically, like, eight days of each other, I think.
What did that do to you?
Well, I had to go and help my sister in Massachusetts handle all that, and I wrote both their obituaries and spoke at my dad's memorial service, and
that's heavy.
And when I came back, I don't know if it was right away, but I came back, and when I went into work one day, they had just, like, moved my desk, sort of like in Office Space, where they just moved the guy's desk downstairs. They had moved my desk to a back room, and I was like, okay, I'll see, like, I quit, I'll see you guys later, and just grabbed whatever things were mine that I wanted and left. And I was like, I don't need this, you know. I'm already not liking this that much, and
that was just the needle, and the last.
And yeah, I'm not going to get stuck in the basement with Milton. So I, was like, I'm going to become a Hollywood actor because, I'm over this. And I had been doing stuff on the internet and kind of built up a certain amount of, notoriety or, you know, contacts, and I had been making my own stuff, and I had seen how the casting process worked, at least on commercials, which are probably the most, like, just the casting process is so it's based on stereotypes. It's not, there's nothing else, you know, because casting for a commercial, and it has to be because a commercial is 30 seconds or a minute maybe, but like you have to tell a story in that amount of time. And if people can't recognize, oh, that's a biker and that's a magician. Or, you know, like...
I got you. I know what you're saying.
If they can't recognize that within the first 5 seconds of who these characters are, then it's harder. It's infinitely harder to tell the story.
Got it.
But I had seen that. You know, I had worked on a ton of commercials and seen the process, heard the conversations. I know we want a blonde girl, but she's... Blonde. She's really blonde. I don't know about that. Like,
okay,
well, we could dye her hair.
So go she's on. So what were you gonna do?
So I decided that I was gonna be a Hollywood actor, and I was gonna grow my beard out and play homeless guys in TV shows and movies and commercials if they needed a homeless guy.
Now you specifically thought that. Why was Because just you thought casting, they're going to want a specific guy, so I'm going to be the specific guy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's, they want a specific guy, and so I said, that's the specific guy I can be.
And did you start getting work as the homeless guy?
Yeah, I mean, I started getting work, and it wasn't necessarily as the homeless guy, which was kind of a surprise, but a pleasant surprise.
So and, you submitted for dudes like that, but then, well, how about this role?
They'd offer you something else. For anything that I thought fit me. And
but you'd get offered different roles.
Yeah, and I got different roles. I think I've played maybe Russian more than I've played homeless, but I did play homeless. I played a homeless ice skater at one point on a TV show.
That's insane. So is that what you consider yourself right now, as a full, like, I'm an actor?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what else you would call me. I'm a Hollywood actor.
That's fantastic.
I have a commercial agent. I have a theatrical agent. I have...
And no real job.
A manager.
And no real job.
Well, yeah, no real job. I have... I have the People Walker, which is now turned into
That's what I wanted to get to. So everything is going great, and when did this happen, and how did it happen?
So about 6 or 7 months ago, I joined SAG, AFTRA, and I had to lay out a good amount of cash to do that.
Yes, sir.
The initiation fee. And so I was like, I need to get some money coming in. I can't, I'm okay for right now, but I'm just spending money. I don't have like a steady source.
You were
income.
Looking for some way to generate some income.
Yeah. So I was looking for a way to generate some income, and I thought about dog walking, because you get out, you get some exercise, it's kind of flexible, and I thought that could be the thing to do. And then I was in my neighborhood, there's a lot of dog walkers. I live in like Los Feliz, Thai Town, Little Armenia, East Hollywood, but I don't own a dog. I've never owned a dog in town. So I've never had to clean up the poop. I've never had to do that. And the idea of doing that and also walking, to really make money doing that, a lot of people walk like 6 or 7 dogs at once, and that seemed really stressful to me. So I started kind of like jokingly saying that I would walk people instead of dogs, because then I wouldn't have to pick up dog poop. Because also right next to all the dog walking flyers are personal trainer flyers too.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, and there's definitely this one guy who's hitting it real hard with the flyers right now, named Brett. So I was like, I started saying that kind of like jokingly, like, well, you know, I just don't want to pick up the dog poop. Like, maybe I'll just walk people. Like, ha, ha, ha. But then, like, every time I said it, the more I would think about, like, what it would actually be, or, like, if somebody would actually want that, and the more I thought about it, the more I thought that somebody probably would want somebody to walk them for either just motivation or safety. You know, those were the two things that
that's what I kind of would think off the gate. Like, well, yeah, these are the two things someone would want to.
Yeah. So like, because, you know, you're a personal trainer, you know, like, a lot of what you're doing is motivating people and holding them accountable. Right. I mean, I've been saying this about personal trainers. I guess I can try to get one to weigh in.
Yes. That's right. You're very correct.
But I don't know. I just saw it as something where there's maybe a lot of people that don't necessarily want to go, like, for the full personal trainer. They don't necessarily want to, and maybe never will get, like...
Yeah, it seems like if you want any assistant, it's a trainer, which is like, you're going to spend an hour with me, we're going to be in a gym, we're going to do this. It's like, well, aren't there any other degrees? That's pretty brilliant,
yeah,
Chuck. And I never thought about that, but it's like, I don't want all that. I just want a little, like, activity or... That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I really dig that. That's very awesome.
Yeah, and some people are like, well, you know, it's walking. People could just walk by themselves, and... But people could also.
You know why
do...
I never pursued surfing? As I didn't want to go by myself. I got the board. I did it a couple times. I bought the wetsuit. I have it, and I started kind of doing pictures at the same time. And I'm like, I would just like if there was someone going, "Hey, just come here. I'll just take." I would do it.
Yeah.
But because there wasn't that person, and that's why I always understood the people like, you know, it just feels weird getting a trainer. And I'm like, look, I get it.
Yeah.
There's this thing, and I said recognizing that I think is the gift, the benefit. Going. I would do this if I was with someone. Well, great. Now you know. Get someone. Boom, you're doing it. Win-win. I think that's, you know, how it should be.
Well, exactly. And you know, people say, oh, you could just walk, you know, but...
Well, yeah, you could just go to the gym, too.
You could just go to the gym, too.
You could eat chicken and broccoli all day.
Yeah, you could just do push-ups and crunches by yourself.
Exactly.
You could just do stairs.
Bravo.
I mean,
bravo.
So that's the thing. And then... And also the safety factor. I do know a lot of girls that don't necessarily feel safe.
Well, even
walking.
On the news now. I mean, they're showing girls, you know, during the day getting attacked now.
Yeah.
I mean, at a college, it was Orange County or something, like out in the middle of the day walking in a neighborhood, some girl got, and like, so.
Yeah. And just getting harassed, you know.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, well, this is a terrible, you know, it is terrible. But somebody said, you know, somebody left a comment like the world we live in. But, I mean, 200 years ago, nobody went anywhere by themselves. I mean, like, if you read a book from, you know, even Dickens or whatever, it's like if they met somebody on the road traveling by themselves, they were either a criminal, crazy, or like a super badass, right? I mean, nobody walked around by themselves. Nobody went anywhere
That's
by themselves.
A great story.
Look at Romeo and Juliet. Like, Romeo doesn't even go anywhere by himself. Like, it's weird when he does, you know?
That's great.
He's got
Chuck.
His posse. Everybody had their posse. And, you know, it is...
Did any of that go into this thinking of this?
Yeah, well,
or did this all kind of come after?
Yeah, I mean, like,
those are kind of some
definitely like the deep thoughts on it. Well, because I've been triggered by, not triggered, but like I've had to respond to
these
things.
Well, it's like this. I've been talking like this for a long time.
Yeah.
To my clients. And it's like, well, now I'm talking to clients and I'm talking on a podcast and I'm talking to guests. So I know exactly. It's almost like it's okay. Now that thing I was doing, I'm doing. 3 times as much every day. So your skills, your senses, everything gets heightened on that topic.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But I mean, like the big thing with this is that was where I was coming from, like where I was coming from trying to start it was just safety, motivation, giving people accountability to get out of the house, just get out of the house.
Personal trainer right there.
Yeah. But then when it actually got started and got attention, people started giving all kinds of other reasons why they might want it, or you know, and like through using it have kind of shown different ways that the service could help people, and you know, one of the things is. That's been brought up by people is just the loneliness factor and people wanting to just be able to talk and actually connect to another person, which is something that a lot of people are interested in about this. And then, but there's all these other things, you know, like from basically just kind of almost using it like a babysitting service for friends and family visiting, you know, it's like, I don't want to,
oh, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Like, like my friends, you know, my family's here and they're staying with me, but I don't want to, like, I need to get some stuff done, and I feel this pressure to, like, entertain them and show them stuff, and they're just, like, sitting around the house, and,
fantastic.
They already did the tours, and they already went to Universal or whatever. It's like, I don't want to just tell them, go out, get out of here, go walk around. But so it's like, you book something with the people walker,
so
set
them up.
How did
you start this? Like, what was social media vehicle?
I started a Facebook business page, or
oh, you did?
Facebook
okay.
page. I started telling my friends and trying to harass them into walking with me. And then I started putting up flyers, just like the
trainers.
Yeah, just
okay.
like the trainers
and
the dog walkers. Yeah. And, you know, and on the flyers, it's pretty explicitly spelled out, you know, what I think people are looking for in the service, but definitely in a playful way. But I, you know, I feel like I was
what does
pretty,
it say?
Pretty clear. It's like, you know, don't like walking alone, need motivation to walk, don't feel safe walking alone at night, don't, and like the last one was don't like listening to podcasts or music, but don't like walking alone in silence, forced to face thoughts of the future and the and your own insignificance in the ever expanding universe.
Nice. That's probably the one I was thinking about. Yep, that one. Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, and I mean, that definitely people thought it was something fun and funny, but I think it was the same thing with people that saw it, is like, it sounds funny when you first say it, but when you actually think about it,
well, when you say personal trainer, no one laughs.
Yeah. Nobody laughs.
You say people walker, people be like, oh, but how you explain it, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
There's no difference. There is no difference at all.
But I don't want to bill myself as a personal trainer because I don't have...
No, but I'm saying it's more of a serious thing going, look, as a personal trainer, you're trying to better people.
Yeah.
You're trying to motivate them, and they're being accountable to another person. You're doing that. So, I mean, I love all your respect in that, but I just like, Hugo, I want to be a life coach. I'm like, you're a life coach. There. I just said, you know, you don't need someone to say what you are title. Because I, you know, when people are like, what are you? I go, I'm a cheerleader. I don't even like saying trainer.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? It's like, well, that means I count, so you lose weight or build muscle.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not that. I'm like, that's not me. So, you know, whatever you call yourself, you can call yourself. You know what I mean? But again,
yeah.
I like that there is this. Well, again, if anything takes off, I think there's got to be some sort of root in good, positive intention.
Well, I think what happened was people seeing it and being interested in it.
Saw the good in it,
yeah,
right away.
But and that also they, you know, maybe they did think it was still funny, but they were interested in it enough to reach out and try to like do some sort of interview me and talk to me about it, and that kind of snowballed. And I think the reason why it snowballed so much though is, and why people actually watched the videos and read the articles and responded the way they did, is because it is something that almost, it sounds like clickbait, but when you actually click on it, because that's what clickbait is, it baits you to click on it. So you begrudgingly click on it. But when people actually do click on it and read the article,
pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. They're like surprised that it actually is something worthwhile. And like, you know, I don't know how many comments there are on things about this, across the internet, but about half of them are people saying, this is the stupidest idea, but my aunt in North Carolina could really use this because she doesn't feel safe walking alone at night, and she can't get off until after 7 most nights. Like, this is so stupid, but my dad could really use somebody to get him out of the house, and like, da-da-da-da-da. Like, this is so dumb, but actually, like, I'm scared to walk alone at night, so I guess
that
I could use it sometime. Like, everybody
funny.
Starts, half of the comments start with, you know.
Which is that unfamiliar. You know, you walk into a store, can I help you? No, I don't need anything. And yeah. It's like, well, I'm shopping. Yeah, I do. And then it's like, well, yeah, actually, I do need some. Yeah. Again, something unfamiliar. But I love at how quick they turn because, you know, that's the sign of something. Hey, this is different. It's unfamiliar. But right away, you see the good in it. Yeah. I just like the pureness of it. You know, like when you're talking about it, it's like, it might sound bad, but it's like, okay, where's the bad in a people walker?
Yeah.
That's that thing. It's like, you know, like that's what I would say about my art. You know, if someone said, hey, here's Tom's picture. You might not want it. You might, but you're like, oh, that just, it stresses me out looking at those, you know, you wouldn't get that kind of. So anything about you or this people walking, but you'd never get anything. You know what I mean? But you know, it would be a minimum good or it would be a maximum good, but there's in no way you could get bad out of it.
Yeah.
So did it start taking off, like you getting paid or just the hype of it started getting bigger or were people actually hiring you?
Yeah, I mean, I started getting hired and started doing these interviews and got more interviews and then more people wanted to walk
so what
me.
Should be happening right now is you should be filming your own documentary.
Yeah.
Because I can see this turning into something like a documentary or like a movie or something, and it would be great to have
Yeah, I've joked about, you know, People Walker action movie. Where it's like, I need you to walk me from this point to this point at 7 sharp. And like, oh no, I've been shot. People Walker, take this disk drive to my brother at this address. But don't, they're watching. But they're watching.
Oh,
don't take
God.
Any forms of public transportation or private transportation. And don't, and make sure you walk. Don't run. You have to walk.
You are spending a lot of time thinking about people walking. But I'll tell you this, as a trainer, I could say across the board, the number one thing anybody should do if they're not doing anything is walk. You know, because I would say, just move. Well, what's that mean? Go from the couch to the kitchen. No, just get outside, just walk around the block. Like, just that. So I'm all about it. So real quickly, the name Chris Allender, ring a bell?
Yep.
Soapbox.
Yep.
So I trained him.
I heard.
Okay, so you found all that out. But then it was so funny because I think I told like 2 clients, and then the second client goes, looks at me like, I go, what? She goes, Chuck McCarthy, do you know? And this was Ernie Walker. Now, she was the first person you called in California?
Yeah, I mean, Ernie.
Or you knew she was one of the one?
Yeah, Ernie was somebody I had met in Atlanta. We were actually in a band together for a very short period
of time.
Oh,
see, I thought you met here. You met in Atlanta.
No, yeah.
Oh,
we knew each other in Atlanta, and so she was one of the people that I knew out here. So, yeah, definitely she was like somebody that I was like, Ernie, help me when
but
I got
it's so
here.
Weird, though, you know, because I'm training a client, and, you know, Ernie and her company used to work with Soapbox and still do, so they're all affiliated. But, you know, I'm just talking to one client and he's like, oh, hey, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, People Walker. You know, which is so, like, again, there's not a lot of people, like, all over that have heard it, but it's happening. So, again, but I mean, to mention it to someone and then a client go, I'm the person that they, and I'm like, I just felt like LA got small or it was just so trippy because I'm like, what?
Yeah, and then, like, I know Chris and the Soapbox guys. Because of Ernie.
Because that's back a long time ago. Yeah. But then it was great because then Ernie goes, she sends me a text and she goes, here's Chuck's publicist information. And she goes, and here's Chuck's information. And I didn't care one way about it or anything. But then when I sent, you know, your publicist, Steve, the information back and forth. And then I got the thing for you. You said, hey, Steve's handling my stuff so I don't mess nothing up. And it was such a great thing to get from you because I was like, no, I don't care. But it was just like, I get it. It, you know, like one day I was doing this and then the next day I'm on the phone with Ethiopia. So it had to just kind of almost turn overnight.
Yeah, it was crazy. And I mean, the great thing about Steve is that he's somebody that I went to college with. And actually,
Ernie said you guys have history as well.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
And he was actually also, he and Ernie were both members of the same band that I helped start, but Steve was in it after I actually left Atlanta. So, yeah.
Dude, that's just trippy.
It's that called Attractive 80s Women. No. I mean, it is, but...
that is amazing.
But yeah, so he literally just moved out here, but he has a solid publicity company, publicist company. And he handles, he and his partner have a couple of, have a growing staff of people handling a growing roster of mainly music clients. But I was like, Steve, help me, Steve.
That's fantastic. And he did, though. Yeah, that's super cool.
And yeah, it was great because he like literally moved out here and then like a month later.
You know what I need, Steve?
Yeah. Well, it was funny because it was like he moved out here. And then we were kind of talking about it, and then he went off on he went to a wedding in like France or something, and like as soon as he left, the one video blew up and went viral, and then like I was getting all these calls, and I'm like, damn it, Steve, like
this is when I need you.
He left, and then but yeah, he came back, and I was like, Steve, please.
So if people are listening, what is the video? If you just go Google YouTube People Walker, or is there a certain name, or do you have more than one video?
If you just search the People Walker, the Circa video, it's a kind of a newer news website called Circa. They did a video about me, and that has 10.4 million views on Facebook.
That's insane.
Which I feel like a more important number is that it has like 120,000 shares.
Oh.
So 120,000 people were like, ripple I effect. Like this enough to like share.
Well, you know, one of my
people.
Things is I love affecting people, and obviously you do too. But I said the one thing that is above and beyond that always is when that person then does it to someone else or pays it forward in the ripple effect. Because to me, it's like, I didn't create that. I just got to be a part of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's very, 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 very cool.
Yeah. So there's that video. And then, I started getting attention, from that video really. But then I got interviewed by, Rory Carroll, from The Guardian. And
wow.
He did an article about me and The Guardian, I mean, I would guess it's one of the biggest, or if not the biggest newspaper in the world, just because it's read throughout the UK and people here read it online.
That's insane, dude.
So, yeah. So once that...
When was that?
I guess a month and a half ago.
So September-ish?
Yeah, late September.
Wow.
And when that came out, that was when like everyone in Australia, New Zealand, Ireland, England, you know.
Now, do you have any friends from childhood anywhere, Alabama, Massachusetts, that are like, hey?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely like a lot of people on Facebook.
They're remembering you.
Well, I mean, because of Facebook, I think I was already kind of connected to a lot
Keep
of people.
Keep in touch with them. Okay.
But yeah, it was the craziest one was I got a message from a friend of mine from Croatia, and he was like, yo, you're on German television, and like
no
a picture of his TV.
Way.
And I don't know if I don't know if he was just in Germany, or if he's in Germany now, or if they just get that channel Croatia, or what. But he, you know, he sent me a picture of his TV with me on it, and
that's crazy. So, do you have like anything like this is what I want to do next with this, or are you just kind of doing this and trying to handle it?
I'm trying to get an app developed that would be similar to Uber or Lyft or something like that. That would,
wow.
Yeah, that would help easily and safely connect other people with other people if they wanted to
dude,
get walked.
This is brilliant, dude.
And some people have suggested like wanting to do it like a free thing or, you know, make it just a community. But I feel like there needs to be that structure of the client and the employee there, or, you know,
well,
it needs to be the walker and the walkee, because otherwise the lines can get blurred between
all
like
that,
what it, you know, what is it then if
it could turn into it could turn into Tinder in a minute.
Yeah, it could turn into that real quick.
Yeah.
And if you want to see how effective, I mean, I love Craigslist. I think it's a great site, but if you want to see if that works, you can just go to Craigslist and try to put in platonic relationships that you want to walk people for free, or you want to be walked, or I don't know. It's,
yeah.
It's might well, not
the great
work
thing,
out.
Though, but I mean, I'm just saying, the great thing is this is a brand new, you know, brainchild of yours, and it's in its beginning stages, and you're figuring it out. But what's amazing, all these people are chiming in with these amazing ideas. So it's almost like, look, this thing's got legs. You don't have to come up with, where is it going now? How is it going to, whatever. But I do think the things that you kind of, like what you just said, thinking, well, you know, without this one principle, we could lose. So again, because you're kind of the, you know, curator of it, I think that's a good call, because again, if it just turns into something where people are abusing it, because again, it started out like this beautiful thing. I mean, it's like, hey, hug, and people pass it and they send it along and then they share it with friends and it's like, it's a hug. There's no bad. And then one day, you know, someone taints it and it's like, well, why did that have to happen? So,
yeah. And well, like it's just one of those things where also people always want to know like, oh, what's his motivation or what's her motive?
Yeah.
Why are you doing this? And people can always understand money. I mean, they understand that's why somebody's doing it. I mean, it'd be great to think.
Just keep it straight up and clear. I feel you.
You know, I feel like that definitely still has to be a component of it. But yeah, I mean, that's where I'm going. I'm trying to do that. So.
Has there been anything that's thrown you by this hype? Or instant fame, or whatever you want to call it?
No, I mean, just trying to figure out that next step or what to do and how to get it done. Because I'm not, I was expecting, I was trying to build maybe like 6 or 7 clients.
Yeah, you were trying to build your little thing, and all of a sudden you're on a radio with another country, and you're going, okay, what do I do next? But here would be my advice. I just don't think you should do anything until you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the Facebook movie. It's like, we don't know what it is yet.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know what it is yet. And it's, look what, it's not like, it's stagnant. We should do something, Chuck. You know, it's petering. You know what I mean? It's like, it's exploding. So
yeah.
It's like, well, let it keep doing that. But like I said, in the back of your mind, you got these little things that you want to keep, you know, true to it. I think you say to that. But like I said, dude, when it's got legs like this, I don't think you have to do a whole lot.
Yeah. I mean, the big like pressure to get it, to do something next is that I'm getting so many messages from so many people around the world wanting to do it. You know, they want to be walkers, or
so
they are interested in getting walkers.
Wow.
Yeah. So like, I don't want to let those people down. And I also, you know, obviously there would be a huge missed opportunity. But also, I just don't want to let those people down because I've said I'm
trying
to do this.
That's a very valid point. Like, I didn't understand that, but people are like, hey, I'm in. And you're like, okay, what do I do?
And I'm all for other people just starting people walking businesses. I have gone.
Meet week.
I've started the process.
Meet week.
Yeah. I've started the process of trademarking it. The name and
Bravo,
and I think that's important. But I also, you know, and I want other people to do the people walking, but having to go through the process of also explaining to people why, like, are you, like, no, well, you can't call yourself the people walker, like, that's yeah. who I am, and like, it's trademarked, and the reason why is because if your service and my service are not the same, then people are gonna get upset, you know, your service yeah. could be better than my service, and then that hurts me, you know, that yeah. still hurts, that hurts you yeah. you know, because then people will be like, well, I went to LA and got people walked and it was not the same, you know, like you're no good, or you know, it's like what that's like people don't ever dude. Think about that flip side, like
yeah
of like if somebody opened a McDonald's and that sounds great, and but like how angry would people get if the McDonald's didn't have fries or McNuggets or whatever, but I mean, even if they, or if they had like the super best, highest quality
continuity
food.
Well,
yeah.
See, I think again, that goes back to you. It's like, you're going to have to determine what you want, like what you want, kind of want out of this. Cause you might go, oh, this is what I want. And then you realize, okay, and here's the amount of work that's going into that. And you'd be like, I'm not going to work that hard to get, or you'll be like, look, this is what I want and I don't care what it takes because this is the one thing. And then there's no work to you because that's what your belief is and you follow that. So like, again, I just think you with clarity will know, because it's crazy where you are. You know, that's not the thing that happens to everybody. So right in the middle of it, you know, I don't think there's one clear path that just jumps out at you when it starts like this. It's like the dust hasn't settled and, you know, here you are running to another podcast to do another story, you know, about it. So I understand it. But, well, Chuck, I just want to thank you, man. It was super cool, like I said, to know people that knew you and have this thing kind of have where someone goes, someone hired the people walker, and these people over there know him, you know, yeah. Ernie and all that.
And I think my friend Willie did your podcast.
No way.
A couple
you know
weeks
Willie?
Ago. Yeah, yeah. Oh.
Dude, Willie was the best.
Yeah.
It was so funny because people are like, Willie? Dude, he's one of the best people I know. People kept saying that about yeah. Willie. So there's like this crew of people. And it's kind of funny because going back to Ernie, you know, she was a guest on the podcast. And I've talked about her mother. Her brother Brett wrote a letter I read on the podcast. And she referred to you. So, you know, Ernie's just been such a great parts, and you know, she's been my client for
yeah.
like 8 years or something like that. So again, it's just kind of cool that I got this little family churning out these guests that come in. But congrats though, you know, you just sound like an awesome dude that I don't, it's like, I just think there's a way of living where if there's not a lot of friction, these things can come to you. You know what I mean? And it just seems like you walked this path
yeah.
where, you know, you just didn't have a lot of this, you know, whatever bad. So something good came up and it blew up and it's like, well, now you got to deal with that and be careful what you wish for and all this and that. But I just love it again. Like I said, it's like someone going, hey, I'm going to start a company called Hug.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just you doing something that's simple, easy, that seems to work, that's found a niche. It's helping people. It's spreading that ripple effect. I mean, dude, you did that. That's
yeah.
insane. Like you, Chuck, did that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's insane, bro. Congrats. And I mean that in all sincerity because, you know, you affected, you know, like this wave across the world. Like that's
yeah.
that's a big thing to have on your life resume.
Yeah. I mean, it is. I mean, I'm blown away. I'm still overwhelmed by it. So,
well, it's gotta be crazy. Well, I just want to again thank you for stopping by and sharing your time and energy and wonderful story. And if in 3 months or 6 months something happens, maybe you come back and you update us on the people walker move.
Yeah, sure. I mean, once I'm gonna say once this app gets released, I'll definitely be coming to
you. Got someone working on it with you, or
I'm trying to find the right
person,
you know, partner, or you know, somebody to facilitate it.
Well,
but yeah, I'm definitely, it's
I think if that's what you want, then that's what you will receive. I think it's coming to you. All right, people, if you have not gone to iTunes, if you would put in Pro You One Word Podcast and rate the podcast, I would really appreciate that. And just remember, you are worth it. Hello and welcome to your Pro-U moment. As always, just super glad that you're here. Thankful for you and thankful that you're here. Spend a little quality time with yourself. Yeah, you. Pro-U. So if we can sit on the floor with our legs crossed, folded, great, eyes closed. If you can't sit like that, if you can't sit on the floor, if you need to be against a couch, chair, in a couch or chair, totally cool. Again, glad you're here. So let's become aware of that breath with our eyes closed. In the nose, out the mouth. Slowing it down. Elongating it and just experiencing that breath. Maybe you haven't been aware of an inhale or aware of an exhale or felt it or listened to it or experienced it. And maybe that's just a good enough different thought to intrigue you pursuing more time with yourself, changing what's between your ears by default, navel tucked into the spine, shoulders above the hips, neutral neck, slow breathing, eyes closed, right there as best as you can for 180 seconds. I'll let you know when time is up. You may begin now. Thank you. okay, if you can stay there physically for a little bit longer, if you have to move or stretch, that's fine. But just maybe keep the eyes closed, kind of stay here mentally. So I've said this a lot before, you know, suit up, show up, something will happen. Don't suit up, don't show up, guaranteed nothing gonna happen. And I just think Chuck did that well. You know, I'm gonna do me. I'm gonna do me well. And I think just in it lies that pure intention of goodness. He's just trying to do good. The bottom of it. Just trying to do good for people. I just think if that's the underlying current of anyone's path, you will find success. But you really need to be in a good place to know yourself that way, to embrace and celebrate your uniqueness and follow your own path. I mean, Chuck followed no one. And that's the beauty of Chuck. So find that beauty in yourself and make you the best you that you can by your choices, your words, your actions, and the thoughts that you allow in your head. Peace and God bless.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.